All right. Next item on the agenda is request to establish an artificial reef at Bluefish Rock. Let's handle that, Jack. Mr. Meyer? Hello, Mike.
How are you?
Just fine.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. If I may, I would like to
ask
some recent comments and proceed to the project.
Thank you, Doug.
If I may take a second to get set up here. Good afternoon, Commissioner, gentlemen. As you'll recall, this is my third appearance before the board concerning this proposed artificial reef site.
Hopefully a charm.
We'll find out. But to kind of refresh, you will recall that we've recommended building this artificial reef site, which is a little over 3 miles east-southeast of the Grandview section of Hampton. The location is reasonably close. It has reasonably close access from the salt ponds area, and as such, it enjoys a great deal of support from the recreational fishery. This site also follows a siting plan suggesting artificial reef locations that was done for the agency back in the 90s. The reef program does have an Army Corps of Engineers permit for the original site, which, as you can see, is marked original proposal. Since the project was initially brought to you on February 27th, we have had two meetings involving commercial and recreational fishermen. The first was held on March 14th, and basically that meeting ended up with tasking the artificial reef program to look into additional areas. It was made very clear by the recreational folks present that the site that I had suggested just was not acceptable to them. It was too valuable to give up. We were advised that perhaps going to the east or the southeast of the proposed site might be a good alternative. Mr. Pete Freeman suggested areas to the north and south, as you can see by the crosshatched area. Once we had our meeting and we discussed it, there was little support for going to the north or south of the originally proposed area. So what we ended up doing was the artificial reef program was tasked to conduct some surveying work. Basically, look at the areas proposed per the March 14th meeting to the east and the southeast. And you'll also see a yellow square there. C.D. Hancock had also proposed an area to the southeast, just a little bit further out from where we had initially thought we needed to do the survey area. So in response to that, we included that in our work. We held a second meeting on May 3rd, and what we did was present the results of the side scan work. And our side scan images are very similar to what you see right here. what you're looking at is an image that indicates that we've got a very flat, sandy bottom. All of the images were almost identical. There are very little features on the bottom out there, very, very flat, and basically all four of the areas appear to be good, flat, sandy bottom. We saw the occasional school of fish, as well as some evidence that some of the areas had been worked, these being schools of fish in here. But basically, what we came up with was the fact that from a construction standpoint, and that's a key factor here, from a construction standpoint, from the standpoint of the person would have to, folks would have to build the reef and install it, put in the structure, the original site, the site to the east of it, or the two sites kind of combined to the southeast, it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of another. And once again, from the standpoint of constructing that reef site. We held our second meeting, and the various sites and our findings were discussed, and we received some more input from both the recreational and the commercial folks. And basically, we got kind of a loose consensus that perhaps the area proposed by C.D. Hancock would be acceptable, although by far not the first choice of the recreational community. And basically, what it boils down to is if you look at the original proposal and the area proposed by Mr. Hancock, there's slightly under a mile and a half difference between the centers of those two locations. In other words, if you're leaving from the salt ponds, you'd have to run like another mile and a quarter to get to the area marked in yellow versus the originally proposed site. Now, the staff recommendation on this is to proceed with the area, utilizing the area proposed by Mr. Hancock. Now, having said that, I need to stress the fact that there is a great deal of support from the recreational community for the originally proposed area. Also, there is, even if we were to utilize that yellow area, there is a concern on the part of the commercial folks as to the size of the reef. They would like to see it cut down considerably. Now, one additional factor I'd like to make you aware of, you see these two blue lines in there, kind of intersecting. They basically go from Cape Charles down towards Thimble Shoals Light, as well as the end of the York River Channel, entrance channel, down toward Thimble Shoals. Those are two areas that when the tugboats make their cut, their tows, those are two areas that are frequently traversed by tugs with barges.
How did and, you confirm that, Mike?
My first input was from Joe Callista, who works with me on the reef program. He has 30 years' experience in the Coast Guard, and he's very familiar with Hampton Roads. And I also talked to Aids to Navigation over in Portsmouth, and John Walters confirmed that Joe's estimate of where the most likely traffic patterns would be was on the money. Now, the upshot of this would be that if we were granted any area to work in other than the originally proposed area, I would go back to the Corps of Engineers and either modify the permit, adjusting the area to whatever new location we might end up in, or canceling and relinquishing the original permit and filing a new application for a new permit for whatever compromised area we were to end up in.
Well, I mean, it seems totally illogical to place an artificial reef in a tugboat traffic area. Let me ask you a question, just for what it's worth. We've been beating this around for a long time. We really would like to get moving on it, but sometimes haste makes waste, and I'm just throwing that for what it's worth. In other words, if you were to relocate the reef to a site, just for what it's worth, outside of the tug traffic area, wouldn't there be a time span between the time you have to go out and get your RFPs and different things, request for proposal and perform different things, while you could also simultaneously be getting an amendment or a change to the Corps of Engineers permit? Or not? And I'm just thinking out loud.
The thing to do would be to go for the Corps of Engineers permit first so that you're sure of where you're, you know, where you'd be referencing the construction or the development activity. And that would probably
But you could be doing, well, just to turn around, you could also maybe be doing a little bit of RFP work, maybe not all of it, but you could be doing some RFP work, at least leg work and book work, while you're waiting on a permit, couldn't you, in anticipation? I mean,
That's certainly a possibility. It's a possibility.
I don't want us to build a reef that ultimately someone's going to say, it's going to tear up tugboats, it's going to cause a problem, we've got to, I don't even think the Corps would permit. Would the Corps permit one if it's in a high-traffic area like that?
We've already got a permit for that site.
Well, which begs the question. Okay. We're not going there, Kyle.
Makes no sense.
Well, so...
So basically, the staff recommendation is to go with the site proposed by Mr. Hancock, with the understanding that there is concern with the recreational community on the size of it, as well as concern with the recreational folks that it's a little bit further out than what we had originally proposed.
I just got to ask one dumb question. Now, if the Corps doesn't have a problem, is it going to be a hazard to navigation? Is it going to be a, is it going to be an impediment? Is it going to be a problem?
It'll be.
Or is the Coast? Or what does the Coast Guard say? Has Coast Guard been?
The Coast Guard says that tugboats usually, if they can take a shortcut, they're going to do it. And a coastal tug and barge, anything with about 13, 14 feet of water or over, they're going to go right on through it. They're going to use it. And you don't hit 13 feet of water until you get a good ways to the west there.
Okay. Anybody have any questions of Mike? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In addition to the navigational conflicts, are there any other uses or conflicts that are mitigated by moving it to the southeast? In other words, are there additional commercial conflicts?
Actually, from a fishery standpoint, we would have less commercial conflict by going to the area proposed by Mr. Hancock.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
That area is utilized less.
Okay. It's a public hearing. Matters open for public hearing.
Thank you.
Who's first? Come forward, sir.
It's flattering. That's my name up there, but I represent a bunch of people, so I'm not the one to pick the site. It's merely a bunch of information. Now, my name is C.D. Hancock. I represent the Coastal Virginia Watermen Association. Thank you for having me today. First of all, I'd like to say we do not oppose the reef. We never have, and our stand on the other reefs, we didn't oppose them at those times either. We just merely wanted to be involved in picking the area so that it would be less conflict with the gear types that we use and so forth and so on. So all of these questions you were asking were raised at these meetings that we had, and we covered them, you know, at length and whatnot as far as the tugboat traffic, and I told them about the tugboat traffic going across their original proposed site. There was some questions about that. Well, I was on the side scan boat for like 12 hours that day. We were doing scanning, and Joe was on there with me, and I said, "Hey, Joe, see that tugboat there? That went right across the original proposed site." A little while later, another one come from the north and went right across there. And, of course, where we were scanning was out there to the yellow square, and there was no traffic. So they take the path right across the original proposed site. But anyhow, we don't have a problem with it, and merely the reason we wanted to move it to the southeast was that we weren't really notified about the process when it got started, so we didn't know anything about it until the permit had been gotten, and that, I guess I'll assume, was some discussion was made. We weren't aware of it until February. So there was a lot of stuff that happened prior to us knowing about it. And merely all we wanted to do was to try to relocate it in an area that would be less impacted as far as the guys working. And you know the edges and the breaks and whatnot. And if you get into the chart of it, you'll see the little finger and the edge and all. And all we tried to do was move it off there, off of the edges where the guys work. So basically our position is that we wanted it moved simply to get it out of the way. We did not oppose the reef. So that was our stand, and we thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Hancock. Any questions? Thank you, sir. Dr. Bob?
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
And Kelly, you're next.
Colonel Bowman, Commissioners, I'm Robert Allen. I'm a longtime recreational fisherman from Hampton, and I represent myself today. I kept a boat at Dandy Haven Marina, which is very close to this site, for about 15 years. Then I moved to Salt Ponds Marina about 15, 16 years ago, and that's where I reside, and that's where I fish from right now. It's right near this discussion. Brief. To outsiders not really close to the industry, which supports my recreational fishing sport, the casual observer may believe that my pursuit of recreational sports fishing contributes little to our local economy. But a close look reveals a far different story. 3 weeks ago, I drove around Hampton, and I visited 14 businesses that depend directly on the sport of recreational fishing for their jobs and income. I also wrote a list of all the businesses in Hampton which may benefit from this artificial reef at Bluefish Rock. My list included 25 businesses in Hampton alone. I brought some charts, but we won't go into that because I think you've discussed that. But I did bring some charts to show you that there are no buoys out there now, but traditionally there have been historical areas where boats travel, and they still travel in those areas. And so I'm in favor of us choosing the original proposal, but I'm in favor of us being a little larger. And I'm concerned about those boats that are out there today. I don't know there's any way that you guys can affect the Menhaden boats in the lower bay during the spawning of cobia, but if you accept a reef, the sooner you accept this reef site, and I don't know when it becomes effective, but there is an exclusion zone in that. And my feeling is, and a lot of other recreationals feel like, we don't want this smaller, we want it larger. And if you guys want to do something about the cobia, that are protect the cobia that are in that area and that are beginning to spawn there and keep the Menhaden boats, you'll accept the original proposal, but you'll make it a lot larger, maybe about four times as big as that. I think you ought to have a fourfold or a fivefold increase, because something's got to be done about the that are there. So I just recommend that we approve the reef. I think it will be approved. I don't think there's any question about that. But I want you to know that I went to all these businesses, and every one of them were in favor of having that reef. They employ hundreds of jobs right here in the city of Hampton. And I had done. I didn't go to the people in Newport News and Gloucester and people that I support by my sports fishing. But the recreational people support a lot of land-based jobs, a lot more than the commercial people do. So I think you ought to give a lot of weight to that. Thank you, gentlemen.
Doc, real fast, sir. What about the potential hazard of navigation by tugboats through that area?
I don't think there's any. Personally, I don't believe there's any, because tugboats, they choose where they go. And they go outside that. They traditionally do go there. But a lot of them traditionally come inshore. A lot of them traditionally come way, way inshore.
Okay.
The smaller boats. So they go where they want to go.
Relying on your...
They're like the Menhaden industry. They go where they want to go.
Okay.
Excuse me, guys.
Mr. Place.
Good afternoon. My name is Kelly Place, and on this comment, I'm speaking for the Independent Watermen's Association as the Vice President. Before I comment on the reef, let me mention one thing. I'd like to introduce to the Commission a documentary filmmaker, Alif Shoreland, who's over in the corner. And I would encourage staff, watermen, recreational fishermen, or anyone, commissioners, to cooperate or give her information as she puts this documentary together on watermen regulations and a number of other things. So I just wanted to mention that.
Well, good to have you with us.
Yeah. The Independent Watermen's Association and myself, we've never been against the reef program. Ever since I ran a marina just inside the back river there, I've always supported the reef program. However, we have grave concerns, not just about the location, but of the size of the reef. You may remember during the Pocosin Reef hearing, we were very concerned that seems to be a process afoot where commercial fishing is not allowed, very often rightfully so, and everything from the bridges, the jetties, the wharves, the various shorelines, artificial reefs, enormous areas of bottom are taken up where various fishing, mostly commercial, is precluded, and like I said, often rightfully so. This area, the in general area where all the options are historical fishing grounds that many of us have fished for generations since well into the 1800s. We did come to a compromise, thanks to Mr. Hancock's work, of finding a less detrimental or less damaging place to put this reef, but we have huge concerns over the size. Most of our concerns relate to various environmental and ecological concerns. Others relate to allocation concerns. But to summarize that, suffice it to say that we think that it's essentially improper to give specific user groups wholesale enormous areas like this for their personal use without the state or anyone else getting anything from it. And I think the economic impact arguments are very much overstated. And I would keep in mind that essentially, when you take people off ground that they fish for many generations, it's a reallocation. And I don't think that this type of reallocation comports with the standards that the Commission usually uses in such a reallocation. Just to give you an idea of how vast this is. It's almost a square mile. That's almost 19 million square feet. Now, why? This isn't a reef. This is a vast area that's being appropriated. Say, from the first reef thing, from the Pocosin Reef issue, I posited that you take your normal big box store like a Walmart, about 100,000 square feet. Now, if you took one Walmart, which is big, and crumbled it up, which, by the way, isn't maybe a bad idea for some of these big box stores, but if you were to crumble up one Walmart, you would have about 1/200th of this reef. That's enormous. It's unprecedented, the size of these. But ecologically, environmentally, here's what we're worried about. We're worried about various changes in the composition of the flora and the fauna that come about when you change the bottom structure of these areas. The reason these areas are like they are and the surrounding flora and fauna are like they are is that in an evolutionary sense, they've evolved around why the currents swirl the way they do, why the larvae are dispersed the way they are. One case in point is the Pocosin Reef. I found that one reason so many watermen were upset about the location of that, as well as the size, and we thought we had agreed on 1/3 the size, it turned out to be 1/2, but the most sensitive bottom, the most sensitive and productive area, even though we had agreed not to have that covered, is now underneath that reef. And here's why. A number of the clammers told me, well, Kelly, we go out there, and the last few years, sometimes we come across areas of oysters, and while they're clamming in these areas, they would end up bringing sometimes bushels of oysters, just several bushels a day of large market-sized oysters. Now, that wasn't to be kept. They had to be dumped over or severe penalties are assessed. But the issue is this. That area in the Pocosin Reef is MSX and Dermo Central. There shouldn't be mature oysters there. And why did those oysters come about there? It's because of the configuration of the bottom and the way the larvae and the spat set. Now, by dumping all these tons of rubble, a square mile of rubble in an area like that, you're changing the ecosystem. You're changing things, and if those changes are good, well, that's one thing. If those changes are bad, it's another. Has there been an environmental impact statement done on these? I don't think so, and we're not pushing. We don't want to file. We've talked with council. We don't want to file for an environmental impact statement. It's an inefficient thing, and it causes a lot of trouble and a lot of cost to people. But let me give you another case in point of why we might have to do that. If we can't, we would like to see this reef reduced to a quarter of its size. Like Commissioner Bowman said earlier, haste makes waste. One example of haste making waste was early in the reef program, one of the first examples of jumping before you know what you're doing and what you're doing to the bottom, they were using tires. They put thousands and thousands and thousands of tires on artificial reefs offshore. Well, those all came loose. And so for years and years, even up to this day, countless tires were washing up on the beach. Ecologically, it just goes to point out that before you go and do something in perpetuity to the bottom and putting these massive amounts of debris into an area, you need to have a pretty good environmental assessment of what's going to be done, and that hasn't been done throughout the history of this reef program. We would like to see it reduced to a quarter mile, and here's another grave concern we have with this project in particular and the material that's going to go on this project. We've been told that one of the bridges that the rubble is going to come from, whether for this reef or the Pocosin Reef, is one of the two bridges over the Mattapan-Pamunkey, the Lord Delaware, or the other bridge that are coming down in favor of the new ones. Well, one of the two bridges is coated with a polyaromatic hydrocarbon compound, PAH. That's one of the most significant, I think it's in the top five toxics that the EPA is concerned about.
Kelly, we learned our lesson. Just to give you, we had a situation where we had a problem with that.
Right.
We now subject all of our stuff to laboratory analysis
Right. Prior
to it going overboard. So we did learn.
I would ask on the one bridge it's going to be used, coated with the polyaromatic hydrocarbon compound, Mr. Myers told me that the person who's getting rid of the rubble and has a financial interest in getting rid of the rubble said that these PAHs, if it was put in a saline area, that they leach out much more slowly.
We rely on the laboratory analysts to do that, but I just want to let you know that we are on that.
And I've always had the utmost confidence for years and years over the oversight that takes place on the chemical composition and the other effects that the debris has that goes in here. However, recently I've discovered, I believe, that maybe that the commission is getting some of the wrong information and that polyaromatic hydrocarbon compounds are not permissible. They're carcinogenic. It's an endocrine disruptor. It causes sex changes in fish. I won't beat this dead horse anymore, but I would mention to you that it's that type of discovery. And we're not in the loop. We haven't been in any of these studies that this whole location is predicated on. We're told that watermen were contacted 15 years ago about these sites, but we've never been told who. We don't know anyone that was ever contacted. We haven't been given the studies, the original study that cited these areas, a whole list of supporting documents we haven't been privy to, but I feel that it's irresponsible for the recreational community not knowing what type of ecological harm could be generated to promote covering vast areas like this. So I did want to also mention to you that in your packet, which I was able to read, there are a couple things that I think are invalid. In the middle of it, you'll notice there's one page dated May 18th from David Barbie, and it says that as of 2006, the following areas were set aside for commercial purposes only in the state of Virginia, and it lists five different temporary gear types in the numbers. Well, the operative word there is temporary. These places, first of all, they added wrong. It's not 2,936. If you'll look at that, the numbers, they increased that through an error in addition. It's 1,009, over 50% error. But I want to point out that these gears here aren't fished all year. It's not even an all-year thing, and recreational fishermen do have access to this. And that's the difference between this artificial reef and these. These are temporary permits that can be revoked by the state any time. This artificial reef is a monstrous area of questionable ecological value that will be done in perpetuity. So as you said, haste makes waste. I have other examples, cases in point that I won't mention to you of mistakes that have been made in the artificial reef program, whether they were financial mistakes, navigation mistakes. Had we not opposed the location and the size of this reef, and it had gone through unchallenged right there at the original proposal, as you can see when Mr. Hancock was out there during the side scan work, tugboats went right through that area. That would have been a perfect example of haste making waste. So we have an awful lot of concerns, and we would request, because we don't want to be against these reefs, but we don't think a mile square area without a real environmental impact of what its effect on the composition of flora and fauna would be, we don't think anything close to that size is appropriate.
Okay.
And I thank you very much.
Thanks, Kelly. Ms. Gaston?
Commissioner Bowman, Associate Commission members, again, Susan Gaston on behalf of Omega Protein Corporation. Mr. Myers has been in contact with Omega. We've participated in the meetings. For that, we are very appreciative. He also has communicated with Lyle Jett, who's the general manager at the Reedville facility, and through those communications, they have discussed the fact that really for Omega Protein, it's just an additional taking of our fishing ground, which, as you know, we are already limited to. So that does create some cause for alarm for Omega Protein. Having said that, I will tell you that the captains and the pilots, the spotter pilots, know very well where they are allowed to fish and where they are not allowed to fish. And they stick to that on a daily basis. Every net set that they drop is reported to NIMS. And those records are tracked very closely by both the company and NIMS. So I did want to make you aware they know exactly where they may and may not go. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Commissioners, I'm Bill Bradley. I live in Newport News. I'm a recreational fisherman. I started at 12 years old. fishing in Willoughby, and I live now in Newport News. The recreational fishermen rely on the reefs. I don't know whether any of you all fish recreationally, but if you go out to Back River Reef on a typical Saturday and Sunday, I'm lucky now I'm retired. I don't have to fish just on Saturday and Sunday. They're anchored boats. They're drifting boats. It's fished, and it's a small area. He points out 10 or 20 Walmarts, but as any of you recreational fishermen, when people are anchored and people are drifting, it doesn't take long to conflict with each other in a square mile. The recreational fishermen and the fish there, it's terrific. It's one of the places that I go. I've got a wife that's got back problems. We can't go, when she's with me, all the way across the bay. There's a better fishing area, the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. But the closer it is inshore, the better it is for us. I'm the larger boat now, but before I had an 18-footer. When you talk about a mile on a typical summer afternoon, a storm comes up, a mile makes a big difference in a small boat going in. And my recommendation as a fisherman around here for the last 50 years, the bigger the reef, the more fish we get, the more less conflicts we have with the people fishing there, and they really work. We do catch more fish on reefs and bridges than anywhere else in the bay.
So you support the original site?
The original site, as close to the beach as we can, because it's safer for us.
Okay.
Now, the tugboats and these things, we have to look out for those. We know they're not looking out for us, wherever we are in the bay. So thank you very much.
Thank you,
I appreciate
sir.
It.
Anyone else? Yes, sir. How are you? Been here a long time today.
Yes, I have. Thank you. I'm Nelson Ortiz. I'm from Hampton. I lived here since 1999. I'm a recreational fisherman. One thing that I have seen is that I'm the membership chairman for the Peninsula Saltwater Sports Fishermen Association, and I get to meet fishermen for the first time when they move in the area. The first thing they ask is, can I get out to the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel on my small boat? And usually the question is, no. If you're coming out of Hampton, you're coming out of Newport News, you depend on an area close by so you can get there. Salt ponds is nice, but not for the poor guys. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You know, that's a nice place to go hide if the storm comes up, or you can beach your boat. But another mile and a half or 2 miles out, that negates the benefit of having a reef there. I like the original place. It's fairly close to either coming out of Wallace's area or coming out of Hampton Roads, or even from Norfolk, if you had to. Okay.
Thank you. Mike, what happens on March 14th? That one, we haven't said much discussion about that, just from since we're talking about them.
Yes, sir. The March 14th areas, the side scan record that we put together consists of over 600 files,
right.
Almost 700. And basically what we did, it was done in 2 days worth of work. Mm-hmm. The top two, if you will, the originally proposed area and the proposed areas from the March 14th meeting, the original area in the square with the Red Cross hatching immediately adjacent to it, that was 1 day side scan work. The next time they went out, the lower box with the Red Cross hatching and the area suggested by Mr. Hancock was a second day's worth of work. I would like to, if possible, quickly address some of the points that have been brought up.
Sure.
All right. Number one, I put those blue lines in there primarily to illustrate that we have looked into the problem of tugboats and tows. And as was stated, the tugboats, for the most part, are going to go where they want to go. They're going to go with what is most efficient with them, and a lot of that depends on what other traffic is out there at the time. This area is not what you would call a thoroughfare. However, they do cut through that immediate area when they take their shortcuts, number one. Number two, the size of the reef was brought up. We do have quite a range of sizes of permitted areas in artificial reef sites. Our smallest one is East Ocean View at 40.5 acres. And our largest one is off the York River at 444 acres. The average acreage on our permitted reef sites is 297 acres. So this site is would have been one of the larger sites. If you figure the percentage of acreage devoted to artificial reef construction, artificial reef development, and our portion of the bay, the main stem, Virginia's main stem, Chesapeake Bay, depending on whose numbers you use, our agency cartographer came up with 0.007, 0.0001 of the bottom tied up for reef work. I came up with 0.0064 thousandths. So, yes, there is acreage tied up. There certainly is. But compared to the overall scheme of things, it's actually a very small percentage. Number one, concerning environmental things, there were remarks made that one of the bridges, we ran into a coating that had PAHs on it, polyaromatic hydrocarbons. We did. And that is one of the two bridges up at West Point. And contrary to what you were told, the pilings, the concrete that had that coating on them, are not going to be deployed on any artificial reefs. And that was based upon work. We had lab reports done. The lab reports were sent to EPA for evaluation, and the EPA said, we got a problem here. So they're not going on an artificial reef. The decking and some of the concrete girder underneath that bridge are going to go to the Mobjack Bay Reef. Concerning the tires, many years ago when I was hired as a one-year temporary employee, that was one of my jobs. I was told to sink six Liberty ships and to start a tire reef program because everybody was doing it. It was a neat thing to get into. So I did what the boss told me to, and I developed a tire reef program. And we got out of that program in fairly short order. Number one, we modified it. Initially, we were taking tires out, baled up. Tires had been split and deploying them, and it showed pretty quickly we were having a problem. So we ended up taking those tires and mounting them in concrete slabs that weighed about 500 pounds with a piece of rebar going through them. And we did. We deployed quite a few of those bearing concrete units in the bay. We got away from that, and for decades now, we've been primarily an all-concrete reef program. We will sink the occasional tugboat, the occasional barge, but we use a great deal of concrete, whether it be clean, inspected, demolition rubble, or whether it be designed structures. So we do work with EPA. We follow their dictates. If they say it cannot go back in the water, then we don't put it back in the water. Concerning the study, siting study that was done 10, 15 years ago, the folks that did the study for us did try to contact Waterman. They weren't very successful. I do not have those records. In fact, one of the individuals that did the work for us has passed away since that work has been completed, so I do not have access to that information. Basically, as I pointed out to Kelly, for example, the opportunity for folks to come up and say, hey, we don't like that site. We've got a problem with that particular site. We're not against reefs, but we don't like that area. The opportunity is here. The opportunity has presented itself during the past three meetings, plus the two meetings that we held specifically devoted to site examination. So the opportunity for input has presented itself. It has been put forward. And concerning, last but not least, if I may, concerning the Pocosin Reef site, you folks saw the evidence. We were told, we had specific areas identified where the watermen said, look, there are natural oyster mounds, there are various reasons why we don't want you coming in here and dropping concrete in an area. So what we did was we moved the reef site to the north, and we cut it in half. So I guess the bottom line is, the only thing I can say is that, in my opinion, the system worked.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions of Mike?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you. At this point, do you think the differential risk in terms of hazard and navigation is significant between the two sites? That is, does the offshore site, in fact, represent a significantly lower hazard and navigation, in your opinion?
My guesstimate, and that's exactly what it is, my guesstimate would be that to try to actually come up with some kind of a measure as one site versus another, I think that entire area, depending on the destination of the tows, vessels, what have you, is like I said, it's not a thoroughfare, it's not a channel, but the entire area is basically going to continue to be used as a cut-through.
Well, there's that issue. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Further questions? Matters before the commission for discussion.
One second.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Fox.
Well, the other navigation issue is if you go to the Hancock proposal, how significant is that extra mile off of the shore for the small fishing boats?
Having been a small boater in the past, in my opinion, a mile and a half, depending on how quickly the weather comes up, how quickly it can catch you, a mile and a half can be a mighty long distance. I think there is a
so
significant...
So is that a bigger risk than the tugboats coming through the summit?
Well, may I kind of answer your question in a bit of an end-around? One of the luxuries that you have or that you try to utilize when you permit an artificial reef site is try to make the fishing areas that you're developing to attract fish and fishermen, you try to make them as accessible as possible. And, of course, no one has accused us of that, but the intent here wasn't to land a reef in the middle of someone else's productive fishing area. The intent was to try to find an area that had suitable bottom and suitable water depth so that we could have the proper navigational clearance and at the same time get as close as possible to the access points. And we're kind of exercising that. That's one of the tenets that you use when you design a reef site, and we're utilizing that here.
Further questions? The matter is before the commission for action. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds to me like the differential hazards to navigation between the two sites are minimal based on what we've heard. I think the recreational community has expressed a fairly overwhelming preference for the original site versus the offshore of the two sites. And I would offer that we approve the original proposal.
Is there a second? Second. Second by Mr. Fox. Further discussion? Mr. Bowden.
With all due respect to Mr. Allen, everybody goes where they want, not just the tugboats, not the commercial fishermen, recreational fishermen, sailboat owners, whatever. I fished in a small boat probably just as much as anyone. I put tens of thousands of hours on the water in all kinds of vessels. A mile and a half in a small boat is probably around 3 minutes time sailing. If you're not listening to the weather close enough that 3 minutes is going to make a big difference, you haven't paid close enough attention to be fishing. You really should, you know. To make a tugboat, evidently you observed at least two tugboats while they were side scanning it, so it is an area that they do use. I'd hate to see a small boat get run over by a tow. The tug would miss you, but if it's blowing, a lot of times the tow does not follow the tug. I mean, I've seen the tug be here and the tow over here, so I won't be supporting the motion for that reason. I think one place probably be just as good as the other, and there's been a preference by the working watermen, which I represent, for an offshore site, and if one site is as good as the other for productivity, we all know they do not produce any fish. They conjugate fish is all a reef ever does, basically. So,
Mr. Schick?
It just seems like that the original site is already a more productive site for fishing. Combined with the problem with the tugs, and I just think that if we should be putting these sites into areas that are non-productive sites that are available, and it seems like the proposed site, the Hancock site, is the least of the productive sites as it sits now. So we can take an area that's not productive, make it productive. Everybody's happy. So I think I can't support the present motion. I would like to put a substitute motion in to
make things complicated on me this afternoon.
Yes. Adopt the Hancock site.
I second.
Motion made by Mr. Schick, seconded by Mr. Holland, the Hancock site. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Well, the substitute aye. Motion we vote on.
We're voting on the substitute motion. I may as well call roll. Dr. McConaughey?
Aye.
Mr. Fox?
I'll vote aye.
Mr. Schick?
Aye.
Aye.
You don't get the vote?
Aye.
No.
Robbins, no. Mr. Tankard?
Aye.
I'll vote no. Ayes have it on the substitute motion. It'll be the St. Hugh Hancock location. Thank you very much for excellent debate.